You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's John Gibbons with a special Anfield Rap show, and I'm joined over Zoom by Jake Wherry, who is from The Herbalizer. He's a founding member and producer, doing all sorts of musical projects at the moment as well that we're going to come on to speak to at the end. But also, I recently discovered a huge Liverpool fan. So, Jake, thanks so much for coming on. First of all, really appreciate your time.
It's an absolute honour. So, it's such an honour. Got a lot of serious dad kudos points on my four sons.
Well, no, I mean, it's great to speak to you, and I reached out to you last week just because I heard you. I didn't even realize you were a Liverpool fan. I heard you on a podcast that we're gonna start talking about called Heavyweight, which is one of my favorite pods, and this was one of my favorite episodes of my favorite pods. So I really loved it. So I reached out to you to say a big well in. I will come on to why, but first of all, you come back saying yeah, big Liverpool fan, and we took it from there. But you must have had loads of people first of all, you know, reaching out to you from all over the world in the last week.
Yeah, I have actually. It's been quite something, particularly since the sort of Herbalizer last released a record in 2018, and we split up about 18 months ago. So for me, the whole social media thing, there's not been a lot of action, and I've got like 44 followers on Twitter, which is probably more than I've got in the last 3 years. And I wasn't a big tweeter. I'm kind of more of a watcher than I don't actually tweet that much myself. And on Instagram, I got some lovely messages from people.
Well, we'll talk about.
And you know, I didn't do anything. I didn't go out of my way or anything. It was just, you know, you just do what you do in life, and it seems like it touched a lot of people.
Well, I would say you would do a little bit, but let's pick up the story. So I'll do the bit before it gets to you. Stop me if you disagree with anything, Jake. But basically, Heavyweight is a podcast that it's made by Gimlet Media, who are one of the biggest podcast companies in the world, and a company generally I admire a lot. And Heavyweight is podcasts about big events in people's lives and how that changed people's lives and how that set up a chain of events that the producer, the very talented producer and host, tries to resolve and help people resolve, really. And this episode was about a guy called Nick, and Nick is a Canadian whose brother was a guy called Chris Perry, and he was a Canadian beatboxer, and he died at the age of 17, very tragically, as all sorts of young deaths are. But Chris was a talented beatboxer and was putting his work out there, and had to the point where he went to festivals and he tried to meet musicians, including Jake, and backstage at a festival. And I don't know if Jake remembers it or not. It didn't come up in the podcast, but was trying to meet an artist he really admired called Bonobo, and went up to Herbalizer and said, do you know where I can find Bonobo? And the guy said the now famous line of fuck Bonobo, we're the Herbalizer. You guys had a really good chat, and he was so inspired by your personalities, he went away to discover your music, and you both, you know, became one of Nick's favorite bands and one of Chris's favorite bands, and a band that the brothers sort of enjoyed together. Later on, and I do listen to the podcast, I'm trying to summarize best I can, but there's a lot to get through. But later on, after Chris's death, Nick found a Bonobo song that sampled what he thought was a beatboxer, and what he thought was his brother. It sounded exactly like his brother, and but obviously he couldn't be sure. It wasn't credited, so he tried to find out. He reached out to Bonobo several times himself, and his management and his agents and all that couldn't get an answer. So reached out to the Heavyweight podcast to do these sorts of things. They couldn't get an answer either. Eventually got back a slightly disappointing response, both in terms of you know, it was a no, but also sort of the tone of it, and it sort of left a bit of a disappointed taste in everyone's mouth, really, in terms of what they didn't feel like it was a good resolution. So they were like, well, what can we do with this music? Who else did Chris admire, and who else can we reach out to maybe ensure that if this isn't a way where his music is going to last forever, then maybe they could be. So that's when they reached out to you, Jake. So you can take it from here, because I've talked a lot.
Well, I think Jonathan, who hosts the show, found a contact, and it came through to me. And I said, well, you know, nice to hear from you. It's a lovely story. You know, I said the Herbalizer isn't producing stuff anymore, but I've got a number of new projects, and maybe if you're interested, we could get involved ourselves. And one of my new projects is recently been named. We've been working on it for 2 years without a name. It's called The Brilliant, which is actually named after the most amazing, brilliant Indian restaurant in Southall, near where I am. Absolutely amazing. And I do The Brilliant with a guy called DJ Sterling Moss. Sterling was going out with a woman about, I think it was 10 years ago, and she worked with my ex-wife in advertising up in London. And my ex-wife invited this girl down for Sunday lunch, and she brought a boyfriend who was Sterling Moss. And, you know, his music, he said techno, I was just like, I wasn't that interested at all in techno, and it was something I didn't know much about, so I didn't really take it in, but I really liked the guy, and we became friends. And then around the end of the first lockdowns in 2020, we decided to sort of get together and have a session in my studio down the end of my garden and see what we came up with. And it was fantastic. So Sterling is he's one of the world's top hard techno or acid techno DJs. And he's been at it right since the sort of end of the hardcore period in the early 90s and the early techno days. And I guess you could best describe it as kind of what it's like, my hip hop and funk meeting his techno breaks kind of thing. And the end result is like Gorillaz meets the Chemical Brothers, for want of a better word. So I told the Gimlet Media people about this project, and they said it sounded great. So they sent us the recording of Chris beatboxing, and we had a session down the studio. I think I sort of chopped it up a bit so I could get it all nicely bang in time the way I wanted it. And then just started, for me, I was thinking Run DMC, Beastie Boys, 85, 86, that kind of on the guitar with the hard drum machine stuff. So I put down some sort of guitar chops, very sort of early 80s hip hop inspired. And then James did his synthy techno wizardry. It's like building a house when you build a tune, you know, it's all about layers, and you get the solid foundation of the drums and the bass, and just build it up and build it up and build it up over a number of weeks. And unlike our other projects, we actually had a bit of a deadline to do this for. They'd asked us to deliver it in, I think, by the beginning of September, and we got the parts in July. So, you know, we had a finite amount of time within to work. But it was really enjoyable. The track, the track's come out sounding really good. I think it's a good testament to this kid, Chris. You know, he certainly had a talent. And obviously the family, you know, Chris's family, his brother Nick and his dad as well, they were made up, like, you know what I mean? And I didn't really have any idea how big the Heavyweight Podcast was. I had an idea that it was popular, but it definitely does seem to have a big reach. And some of the, like, some like member of the Oklahoma, the local House of Representatives, has started following me on Twitter, and, you know, a lot of highbrow magazine publishers and editors and yourself. Obviously, it was a good thing to get involved with.
I mean, absolutely. And the end result is fantastic. And a bit of it's played at the end of the podcast, and more to sort of come, you know, from it next year. But how pleased were you with that creation? Because as you say, you had a bit of a time limit. It's a slightly unusual way to make music, but how pleased were you with the final result?
Really pleased. Part of the agreement we had was that we'll be able to go on and release it ourselves. So it's going to go on our album. which will come out sometime next year. And yeah, no, it's good. I don't think there'll be many other tracks with such a sort of focus on beatboxing on the album, but I think it fits in with the sound that we're starting to make. I mean, it's still really early days. I think we've got 5 or 6 tracks nearly finished.
So why did you want to help Nick? Because in the podcast, you know, Jonathan speculates that, you know, you understood where he was coming from a grief point of view. But was that what grabbed you, or was it a musical thing?
Yeah, there was an element of that, I think. Yeah, I mean, because this kid, I don't know who it was, but it sounds like when Chris met a member from the Herbalizer, he said, "Fuck Bonobo, we're the Herbalizer." That pretty much could only have been me. But I don't know. I don't know for sure if it was. And you know, I love Bonobo. I thought Bonobo's performance at Glastonbury this year was just out of this world, absolutely amazing. I watched it at home. I think my kids were with their mum, and so I was on my Todd, and had a bit of the old vapey, and went on a bit of a journey. So I absolutely love Bonobo. So it was nothing personal.
But no, but good fun and a nice story that sort of come out of it. And obviously,
yeah, but also there was, you know, there was a little bit of money that they offered us to do it, and I can't say I'm exactly rolling in it. So someone says, "Can you do some work in music and we'll pay you?" I'm like, yeah. So it wasn't just for the money, but it was a combination of all of the above.
A combination of all of the above. And so you mentioned before it's going to be, you know, released, you know, on an album. But in terms of the now, did you enjoy the podcast, first of all, when you listened to it back? Because presumably you hadn't heard the full thing or the full even story even till everyone else was saying with
them. Yeah, I really did. And I'll listen to more of them. So I'm quite interested to hear how the other sort of stories come to be and end up being resolved as well. But I thought it was put together really well, nicely edited. I wasn't quite sure about the description of me as the scary. I mean, I'm 6'2" and a big guy, but you know, I'm a lovely cuddly bear. And they described me as, like, you know, one of the enforcers from the Guy Ritchie movie. Obviously he's done his research, because we had a track in Guy Ritchie's Snatch, which has obviously done very well for us as well. It's like by far got more listens on Spotify than any of our other music.
Oh, well, so that
there. That's actually quite a funny story about that, because the story our publisher heard was that Madonna knew our track and she played it to Guy and said, "You got to use this one in your movies." And he did. But then, like, the track is called The Sensual Woman and it features the talents of the absolutely incredible Ulster man, Andy Ross, who plays flute and tenor sax. And he plays this kind of very, you know, like it's like very 70s, like you'd sort of sing into a flute. So you get that singing and playing flute at the same time. It's like I'm not doing it justice, but Andy's amazing at that. And our track, The Sensual Woman, sort of features that very heavily. Andy's also a very in-demand London session musician. And he happened to get a call around that time from Guy Ritchie's producer saying, "We need you to come in and do some flute work on this movie." And they played him the track, The Sensual Woman, and goes, "Look, we love this type of flute. Is there any chance you could do something like that?" And Andy and his Northern Ireland accent stuff have been like, "Well, it's not going to be a problem for me, fellas, because that's me on the track there." So throughout Snatch, there's this incidental just flute playing on its own. And that's our guy, Andy Ross.
Oh, there we go.
A little bit of Snatch trivia there for you.
Well, next time we're all watching, we'll be listening out for the flute, so we'll be able to, whoever we're watching it with, we'll have an interesting story to tell. Just to finish off on the pod and the song that we are, Put the Paradox, before we move on to Liverpool FC and beyond from there, you know, for you, it's obviously been a nice experience. Like you said, you got a bit of money from doing it. You've come out with a really good song that's going to go on the album, and it's been good fun, you know, people reaching out to you, but... You know, we shouldn't underplay what it did mean to Nick and you say his family there, and it is the power of music, and Chris is going to live on forever now through this, which is such a powerful thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's no big deal really, but we, you know, I guess he, you know, it's kind of immortalized him, which can only be a good thing.
Yeah,
I don't even know how old he was when he lost his life, but he was young. You know?
Yeah.
He had his, you know, he had his whole life ahead of him. So yeah. And then it wasn't something we had to go out of our way to do, but if it's brought something to the family, to lighten their grief, maybe, then who am I to complain?
Well, who are any of us to complain? I would encourage everyone to listen to the Heavyweight Podcast. It is simply titled Nick. As I say, all of them are really good, but the latest one featuring Jake and the Herbalizer, well worth your time. So on to Liverpool FC then. You've told me a little bit of your background to your connection with the area and stuff like that, but for the listeners, you know, what is your connection with Liverpool and why are you such a huge Liverpool fan?
My mother was born in Liverpool, down in the city, in a place called Boundary Place, which has been knocked down. You know, outside toilets and all that kind of thing. My mother is mixed heritage, actually. So her father was in the American Merchant Navy in the 40s and had a brief liaison with my grandmother. And mum was brought up, you know, by her white family in Liverpool as a little black kid, which was really interesting for me. Like, I remember I was about 6 or 7. I was brought up in Maidstone down in Kent, queuing up for some trampoline class, and some kid going to me, "Why is your mum black and you're white?" And I was like, "I don't know. I've never even considered it." But you know, well done to my granny, who we called Ninny, for bringing up my mum in, you know, very hard times. So then my nin and the man she married afterwards, Henry, my granddad, they ran market stalls. And my nin's brother, Uncle Jimmy, he had a bag stall. So one of the earliest memories I have is Jimmy giving me a Liverpool like bag in about 1975, 1976. And I guess when I started like junior school, and that's when all kids get into football and they're playing in the playground, it was a great time to be a Liverpool fan. Emlyn Hughes and Kenny Dalglish and Phil Thompson. That's about all I can name off the top of my head for now. But where I was at school, it was very much Liverpool against Chelsea. So most of the kids in London were Chelsea fans, and I was a Liverpool fan with my boy Marcus and my best mate Guy. You know, there were a number of us, and it was a good time because we won European Cups, and I guess I kind of never had much choice. I think when I was about 7 or 8, and all I wanted for Christmas was my Liverpool kit, and I got my Liverpool kit with the white V-neck thing, and lived in it until about January the 3rd. So pretty much had no choice. It was just, I guess if they were at the bottom of the fourth division, maybe I might have sort of gone with Tottenham or Brentford. And Brentford's our local team, to be fair. But you know, that's it. You know, your family. Again, to digress, like in my family in Liverpool, some of them are Blues and some of them are Reds. And,
okay.
You know, there's all stories about divisions during big games and all that. But yeah, all of my closest family members in Liverpool were Reds. And my dad, he came over from Belfast when he was in his late teens and met my mum in Liverpool. And he used to take us to games in the 80s as well. And it's just magical. I mean, you go to a London stadium and you just don't get the atmosphere. I mean, the first time you go to Anfield, particularly because of all that sort of bleak, grey concrete on a rainy, cold winter's day, it's pretty bleak. And the moment you set sight on the pitch, that magical emerald green, it's, you know, I can't even put it into words. It's just an experience, a sensation, and it's magical. And, you know, once you've seen that, there's no going back.
Yeah, absolutely. We've all felt that that first time we were in the stadium and see the stadium. And when you do get the bug then, and you know, as you say, Liverpool are winning things then, you must have been so grateful to have this family, you know, from Liverpool and visiting them. I know it gave you a massive thrill because you told me before, you know, coming up here and the family you had here was so exciting for you and full of love.
Me and my brothers are probably more into it than a lot of my family. Like, none of my uncles and cousins. I think some of my uncles went to Everton, but not that many used to go to Anfield. So they would be amazed that we'd like do the 220-mile drive to come up and drive back. Yes. That's
a big commitment. Big commitment. So when the band takes off then and you're traveling sort of around the world and things like that, how easy or difficult was it to keep in touch with you know what's going on and things, because it's pre-smartphones, isn't it, when you guys are playing a lot of festivals and stuff like that? So, you know, how did you guys, you know, keep in touch with how the Reds were doing?
Well, I guess before the smartphones, it was very difficult. Just text messages. as soon as you could stream things, you'd want to get on someone's Wi-Fi, and you'd be on a tour bus and you'd suddenly drive for a mountain range and you'd lose your 3G or your 4G and you'd miss out for 10 minutes. But yeah, well, you just do the best you can, don't you, to see as much as you can.
Absolutely, yeah. I think we've all been there where you're texting people saying, keep me updated, and then you get cross with them because they're not texting enough. You're like, I need more information.
Well, my brother Nick was always good at sending me the texts for the updates for the big games.
Good on it. Have you got any particular sorts of favourite memories of going to watch Liverpool or particular games that you're fond of the memory?
I think the most magical one, two things come to mind. Obviously, the 2005 Champions League final that I almost turned off at halftime and went to bed. And it was a year after I'd lost my first wife, and I was 35, bringing up these two young boys. My mum was actually living with me, so she was a huge help. But that was really, really special for me, for the whole thing. And my two kids were sort of old enough to get it as well. And more recently, when Ali scored the header, that's just one of the most memorable, amazing moments in my lifetime of watching Liverpool. I mean, there's always going to be a last minute goal or something, but to see a goalkeeper come in and smash it in with his head, and I was with my four sons as well, so we absolutely went mental. We've since I've got separated and divorced, I do wings for the kids, chicken wings. So got a deep fat fryer. And we do buffalo wings, so it's kind of become a, what's the word? It's like an essential thing. The kids are very disappointed. If we're watching a football game and there's no wings, something's not right. So it's something I'm almost compelled to do. So we have it. We watch the big Liverpool games all together, and we eat buffalo chicken wings. And it's me and my four sons, so it's a special time for me.
Oh, it's a nice little family tradition. So are they just as lucky as you are then?
Yeah. Yeah, and George is the oldest. He's 24. He plays FIFA. I think the point I'm trying to make is the young ones, they just play FIFA nonstop, and they know the names of not only every player in every team in the Prem, but most of the European ones as well. Whereas for me, as a single dad and someone who's trying to keep the house and do shopping and do washing and make music and do all the things that I do, I've only got so much of my focus that I can give on football. So I'm really only really follow Liverpool, don't really care about what's happening with other teams. And whereas the boys, because of how much FIFA they play, they're just mad at it and very knowledgeable.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? My children are very young, but my friends who've got older children, they'll say, oh, they know all about all these sorts of players, and we'll go to Fulham away or something. They're like, oh yeah, the guy at left back's really good. He's like, how do you know that? Well, a lot of it is sort of FIFA and also kind of YouTube compilations and stuff like that. But it's great that you've been able to pass on the love of your football club, and also, keeps that Liverpool lad of the family strong as well.
Absolutely. I mean, at one point it was looking like one of them was gonna go Chelsea, and thank God none of them went Man U. the older ones at some point were talking about my second team. I was like, no, there's no second team. You support a team, and it's Liverpool.
Absolutely.
But yeah. there wasn't, thankfully, I didn't have to be that coercive. They knew what was good for them.
Good for them. So just to finish off, maybe just to talk a little bit about your music. We talked about this song, We Are the Paradox, which is going to be on a new album coming out next year, but are you still, loving making music and writing music? I know you had a little gap, but you're still as excited as ever to be making stuff and to be putting stuff out next year.
More excited. Like I started playing guitar as a kid and was pretty much self-taught and pretty much got by knowing the blues scale, which is like just completely blagging it. Then I learned the major pentatonic scale, but I'm not a skilled musician. But about 2.5 years ago, I thought I'm really going to put a lot of focus into working on my keyboard playing and understanding some of these like jazz chords, some of these nice big colorful warm Stevie Wonder's chords. So I've spent hours and hours on YouTube learning, watching tutorials, and in the last 18 months I've been blessed that two of my oldest mates have introduced me to their daughters. So I've got one girl, she's called Hannah, goes by the name of H Minor, And she was brought up in the south of France, Barcelona and Shepherd's Bush. She's half Brazilian, half French. Sounds like Sade. And she does very sort of contemporary Afro beats, Nigerian-inspired R&B, hip-hop and R&B. We're going to be putting stuff out in the new year. And another friend called John Fletcher, he got me into Roy Ayers and acid jazz and jazz funk in the late 80s. He lives in Madeira, and he's got a daughter called Maya, who's 20, and she's at Manchester Uni doing a degree in music. And I have a project with her that I'm going to be setting up a label with her old man and releasing next year. She's like Dua Lipa meets Chic meets Jamiroquai. So, I mean, for me, one of my top 10 albums, without any doubt, maybe even top three, would be Michael Jackson, Off the Wall. For me, it's just a record. When it came out when I was 9 or 10, I loved, didn't hear it for 10 years. You'd hear Rock With You 10 years later, and it's like, oh my God, this is magic. And it just always sounds great. And it's the sort of pinnacle of really good soulful pop production. Obviously, Quincy Jones is an absolute genius. So the stuff with Maya is way more accessible than the Herbalizer. It's kind of poppy, but without selling out. It's got a lot of soul, very funky, but songs that anyone from 15 to 55, they're going to love it. I'm convinced it's going to go, it could go top 10 around the world. It's that good. So I'm very excited about that. And yeah, I've actually produced 140 tracks since last June, wow, which is more than I've made in the last 10 years combined. So it's been the most prolific and fruitful period of my life, which I'm 53 in January. So it's good that, you know, some things take time. But I think I'm going to come back stronger and better than ever before. Well, so if anyone wants to listen, I have a Jake Weary SoundCloud page, and most of the stuff's private, but from time to time I'll switch a song to public for a few days, and just, you know, so if you're lucky, you'll log in and you'll hear some stuff that usually will be private, but little tasters of what's to come next year.
Tasters of what's to come. Listen, Jake, thanks so much for giving up some of your time in a busy week for you when you're very in demand. Really appreciate it. Really looking forward to hearing the new stuff next year. And yeah, and hopefully next year will be a fantastic for you musically, but also for Liverpool. Maybe a 7th European Cup in the summer to celebrate as well, along with this new music. Who knows, eh?
Yes. And I'll be messaging you about tickets of me and the boys if it can be done.
Tom, man, really nice to meet you. Appreciate your time.
Me too. Big pleasure. Thank you very much. Sports Social Podcast Network.